the tabletop. Take away
game mechanics on display.
Three designers share the stage.
Pick a genre and we'll play
the tabletop. Take away.
Welcome back to the Tabletop Takeaway. I'm Ananda Gunaratna.
I'm Charlie McCarron.
And I'm Trevor Muller-Hagel.
And today we are going to start our new series on cone-like games. And of course, where better to start than the classic genre-defining game, The Cones of Dunshire. So The Cones of Dunshire is an epic strategy game for 8 to 12 players. The thing you have to understand about the game is it's all about the cones. It's all about the cones.
Yeah.
The goal in Cones of Dunshire is to acquire 4 cones. But in order to get a cone, you have to build a civilization. So the game revolves around moving around on a board, constructing various buildings on hexes, and satisfying requirements to acquire a subcone, which you need in order to be able to challenge the gods of Dunshire
for their cones.
For the cones. Mm-hmm. There are 4 gods: the dragon, the kraken, the minotaur, and the lava worm, who live in different areas of the map. And so, once you have acquired their subcone, you have to go and then score challenge points using the challenge play. Now, the game is asymmetric, which is always quite fun.
Oh, yeah.
It's got a maverick, an arbiter, 2 wizards, a corporal, 2 warriors, and a ledgerman. I played the ledgerman in our game.
Who is effectively the accountant.
Right, yes. It's
and I was very appreciative. I did not have to play that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I think we can talk more about the specific roles.
I was a wizard myself, and I was I had my own deck where I could draw additional cards from the beginning of each turn and then spend action points, or effectively, to play those cards, depending on if it was night or day, and that was based off of the central cone.
Right. Well, oh, yes, I forgot to talk
about the central cone. Yeah, right.
The cone of decision.
The cone of decision.
The cone of decision. So there's a cone in the middle of the board, and if it's covered, then it is day, and if it's uncovered, then it's night. And in order to control the cone, you have to move your avatar to the middle of the board, and then you have to hold a vote with anyone else who's up there for the cone of decision. But then, even if you win the vote to acquire the cone of decision, which, by the way, counts as one of the 4 cones you need to win the game, you also need to answer a trivia question about the current state of the game correctly. From the trivia deck.
Which, it turns out, is actually pretty hard. Unless it's about you and you know exactly where you are.
Yeah, so
get an example of some of these trivia we had.
Right, well, I won the vote, and I lucked out because my trivia question was involved my troops. Like, how many troops... I think it was like, how many troops do you have on Doom Points? And I, of course, was a ledgerman who obviously doesn't have any troops.
Right.
So that was a very...
Obviously.
Yes. So that was a very easy question for me to answer. But
someone else had, how many troops are there total on the board? Which is like...
Oh!
Yeah.
Very... Yep.
Yeah.
My role, the maverick, I roll my dice, and then my turn is done.
We haven't talked about the dice yet.
Oh yes. My gosh!
Yeah,
we should discuss.
Yeah, we've
the gotten, action economy for the game. Yeah, I'm very sorry, dependent
wait,
on.
We
these
don't want
dice.
To give you the impression like this game is just a mess of mechanics here. There's clearly
there is a system.
We got sidetracked because the roles are so cool, and we wanted to talk about our unique roles. But we should maybe talk a little bit more about how the game works.
Yeah.
So every turn, you roll 3 dice to determine how many dice you're going to roll. This is known as the pre-roll sum, or PRS. Once you've determined your pre-roll sum, then you roll some combination of D6s or D8s. The D8s have different colors on them, which correspond to various actions.
Which I believe they're technically supposed to be D4s.
They're supposed to be D4s. Yeah. But I had to use D8s instead because I didn't have appropriately colored D4s.
Which makes sense.
Yeah, it's equivalent, yeah. though. So anyway, so you then roll your main roll. You roll to determine your roll sum, or RS points, which are divided into both generic RS and specific RS that have essentially been earmarked towards specific actions. Because the D4s, you roll them and you roll a color, and that's basically 5 points, but they have to be used for a specific action.
A guaranteed action. 5 points.
Right.
But it has to be used on that action.
Right. So, for example, one of the categories is... The blue points can only be used to play cards, agriculture cards or spirit cards. One interesting thing about this game is that actually this is quite a bit like Dune, in that certain players control certain parts of the game economy. So like the arbiters in control of the agriculture deck, and the wizards are in control of the spirit card deck. So if you want agriculture cards, you have to buy them from the arbiter. Mm. And if you want spirit cards, you have to...
trade with the wizard.
Yeah. Mm. but anyway, so you roll your dice, then you roll your dice. And then the ledgerman has to write down how many...
RSs.
How many RS
you have earn. For each category.
Right. The ledgerman has to track everything.
Yeah.
That's their job.
Spreadsheets are great for that.
Yeah, I used a spreadsheet and it made it much easier. then you go through the phases of your turn,
mm-hmm.
Which involve playing action cards, buying resources, constructing new buildings on hexes you control, moving your avatar and your troops around the map to fight other players. A second buy phase, which is just like the first one, except you're only allowed to buy resources.
You can't buy agriculture cards or, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's basically how a turn goes.
Unless the Maverick is in play.
Yeah,
so
the Maverick.
Now that we understand that.
Yes, so I have a hand of 7 or 8 cards, however many phases there are in the game. And instead of taking my normal turn and just doing my phases, I have to wait until someone else is doing that phase.
About to
start that phase and play my card and wait. Oh, wait.
The
it's
Maverick
my turn
does it.
To take that phase.
It's a lot of interrupts.
Yes, a lot of interrupts.
I guess, yeah,
and the other piece of it is if I'm controlling specific spaces of that player... I could negate their
right.
them doing that phase.
Yeah, this is known as paramilitary disruption.
Thank you. I think it's pretty funny.
It
felt a little like I just wanted to play my turns right away, but, you know, on the next player's turn.
Which I think was a mistake, because if you'd waited a bit, you could have basically taken all the phases in whatever order you wanted.
Yeah.
One interesting thing about this game, the order in which you take the phases is quite a bit restrictive, because like you build before you get to move, which means that you need to set up your next build action a turn in advance. Which reminds me actually a little bit of Spooktacular. And how that game's phases were set up, right?
Yeah.
Where you're foreshadowing what you're going to do next turn based on your actions for this turn. And I think the phase order in this game serves a similar role, except the Maverick, of course, is free to do whatever they want in whatever order they want.
And technically, they could not do an action their entire turn because they're just waiting for the right moment and maybe it never comes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How did that, well, had I used it more effectively on other people's turns, maybe you guys would have felt a sense of dread knowing that the Maverick could...
Well, and we would then all have to announce, okay, I am doing this phase. Okay, I am doing this phase. To make sure that you have an opportunity to react.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which obviously is very efficient in terms of gameplay.
Now, the conventional wisdom, of course, is that you shouldn't make people's... Well, you shouldn't skip people's turns, right?
Right.
And the Mavericks' paramilitary disruption explicitly lets you skip another player's... Or at least a phase of another player's turn if your avatar occupies that location. So that's a very interesting design decision. How do you think that... functions in this game.
Had we played a full game, maybe I would have expanded out to more than just taking over one person who was next to me.
We were at about an hour per round.
Yep.
And so we made two rounds.
We made it two rounds, played two turns each.
Yep.
It is an epic game.
It is,
you can't forget.
The Twilight Imperium actually might have, you know, a contender.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So one really interesting thing I found about the build system specifically is the way that building works in this game is you need to collect resources, which you do during your first and second buy phases by purchasing them using RS, which you...
Specific RS or general RS.
Yeah. Right.
Of course.
And... The Ledgerman is keeping track of all the RS that you're spending, of course. But the interesting thing is you take these resources, and the buildings are kind of a recipe fulfillment type thing. Like you need a specific combination of resources, which are iron, wood, and
very
stone.
Very Catan-like.
Yeah, sort of Catan-like. But the thing is, you only need to spend the resources to build one copy of the building. And then you can purchase additional copies just by spending raw a flat rate of RS. And I thought this is kind of a brilliant way to avoid the boredom that comes from having to complete the same recipe multiple times, right?
And having to just get a bunch of resources to make the same thing twice.
Yeah,
like you just spell this generic, you know, spend this generic resource, and like, oh, now I've got two or three or four. And since a lot of the gods use, like, how many of these do you have, or how many, you know, then that helps you with the challenges later on, which we didn't actually get to.
Yeah. I guess mostly I think it's kind of an interesting idea, which is that you solve a puzzle once. And this is not a very complex puzzle, but I can imagine in another game, you know, you might have quite a complicated thing you need to solve in order to get some reward. And then you pay some generic resource to get the reward multiple times so that you don't have to go through the effort of solving it again. It reminds me a little bit of like quick travel things in video games, right?
Sure. Like once you get there once, it's easier to do it again.
Right. Or like you get to the other side and then you pay some money to build a bridge and now you can just walk across the bridge and forth.
Yeah.
Can you think of any other games that do something like that?
I'm over here at Stardew Valley, so, I mean, you spend resources to unlock areas, and that's just, you know, more of a procedural situation, but, like, I guess, the mine carts in Stardew Valley, you can access those then and then suddenly teleport across the map,
which is great. Yeah, I'm wondering about, like, in board games.
In board games?
There's, like, you know, there's a lot of board games where you might have to, well, actually, are there, where you have to solve a complicated puzzle, the same complicated puzzle multiple times? This could be used?
I mean, you know, in engine builders in general, you're trying to find ways to accomplish this task, and then you find more efficient ways to do that task as you get more resources. And so then you can get to higher, stronger things. But I don't know if it's exactly the same every time, but it's very similar. Yeah, it's always like the collection of something and then spending the things. It's rarely a collection of something and then spending this generic thing to enhance that one thing.
Right.
Which I think that's really kind of ingenuitive. Like
it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's a really cool mechanic.
Our listeners are probably wondering, like, where can I buy Cones of Dunshire?
One cannot simply buy Cones of Dunshire.
One cannot. If you haven't noticed by now, this episode is brought to you by April Fool's Day.
April 1st.
Yes. And so just to fill our listeners in, if they're like totally confused about this game.
Because not everyone knows about the Cones of Dunshire.
Not everyone has
seen. Though it is a famous game.
Yes. Not everyone has seen Parks and Rec. But if you haven't, as a game designer, you need to watch this episode of Parks and Rec. Yep. So... Ben Wyatt in the show has some free time and decides to make this epic game, Cones of Dunshire.
Mm-hmm.
And we did, well, I did a little bit of, accidentally met the actual architect of this game who made it for the show. So my job at Asmodee, I ran into the head of the Catan Studios, Pete Fenlon, and he revealed that Parks and Rec people reached out and they were like, hey, we want to do something Catan related in the show or something like that. He's like, well, I could make a game up for the episode. And so he basically, I don't know how much time he spent. I don't know, honestly, if the rules that he made are the ones that are printed it up that we were playing.
We were playing on Tabletop Simulator.
Yeah, yep. But either way, it was pretty funny meeting him and finding out, yes, the architect exists. And he put some actual interesting game design things in the game, I think.
I absolutely agree. And so we chose this to be kind of, you know, a comical episode and have fun with it. But
I think there are genuinely some interesting
there are things you can which learn. Kind of like our Candyland episode from last year.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh yeah, this is absolutely a joke, you know, decisionless games. But it's like actually it really bypasses some things and you know, you actually we had actual takeaways from it, which you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I guess back to the...
We didn't get to hear about your special...
the Ledgerman. Hat.
Oh, yeah. So, just a little... The Ledgerman role. The Ledgerman has to keep track of everything in the game.
Yeah.
So that means when players earn RS, the Ledgerman has to write it down. When players spend RS, the Ledgerman writes down how much they have. The Ledgerman will tell people how many RS they have remaining to spend on their turns when necessary. Basically, they do a lot of the bookkeeping and upkeep. And they are also required to wear the Ledgerman hat at all times. Failure to wear the hat is punishable by loss of turn. So I was wearing my Ledgerman hat.
Well, and how do you get points
so,
to spend?
Right, so this is actually a very interesting thing, and I think it might lead me to my takeaway for the episode, which is the Ledgerman is keeping track of all the points that all players are spending, including points spent on resources. And when it gets to the Ledgerman's turn, they add up all of the points everybody else has spent on resources, divide by three, and that is their RS some for the turn instead of rolling the dice.
And so you're trying to convince other people to buy from you, essentially, so that
also sets the prices of the resources.
Right, yes. The Ledgerman also sets the prices of the resources. And there are a couple of restrictions on how you can do it. Like if one resource is cheaper than the others, you have to raise its price. And if one is more expensive, you have to lower it and you have to keep them within a certain range. But the Ledgerman is adjusting the economy every turn. And the thing I think is really interesting about this is the game is asking you to do a lot of real-world work, like real-world layer. One thing that I've been learning about lately is there's this... this theory by, I think, Gilhova on three representations of the self in games, which is that there's three representations of the self, the player, the agent, and the avatar.
Sure.
Where, like, the player is the person themselves, you know, the one who's sitting around the table.
Playing, joking.
Yeah.
Yep.
The agent is the mechanical representation of the player, who's interacting with the mechanics of the game and like deciding on the best strategies in order to win the game. Mm-hmm. And then there's the avatar, which is the thematic layer, which is like the player as they're represented in the narrative of the game.
Sure.
And one very important principle, I think, of game design is that work needs to be rewarded. But often the work that we think we need to reward is work on the avatar and agent level. Like, narratively, your character is striving for something. They should be rewarded for that striving. On the agent level, you know, you're engaging with the mechanics of the game. You're pursuing strategies. Those strategies need to be rewarded. Mm-hmm. But the player level is often neglected. Like, to give you an example, in Monopoly, one player is designated as the banker. And this does not impact the game strategy in any way. They're basically just handing out money and making change.
Yeah.
But that is work. Like, that is work that they're doing. That is upkeep work. And they are not rewarded for that at all. There is no benefit to being the banker.
Unless you cheat. And then there is a benefit to being the banker.
Yes, but that's outside the rules of the game.
Right.
But I think the really interesting thing about the Ledgermen is they are effectively like a Monopoly banker who is rewarded for doing the work. Right.
Yep.
Because for all of their note keeping and calculation and record keeping, they are rewarded with the resources that they spend on their turn.
Yeah.
And that makes the bookkeeping a lot less onerous.
So you don't have to roll dice to figure out how many dice you roll, because you don't roll dice, right?
Right. Yeah. Yes. And so this is like this is rewarding effort on the player level. The player is doing something outside of the game, and the game is framing things in such a way that they feel like their upkeep work is not wasted. And we have actually seen this before in one of our episodes that I think we even commented on the time in Mamma Mia, because in Mamma Mia, if you draw the Mamma Mia card, you are the one who is responsible for going through all of the ingredients and resolving the recipes, and you are rewarded because you go first the next round.
Oh, sure, sure, sure. Yeah,
So I think my biggest takeaway from this is that all work should be rewarded. Not just work on the agent or avatar level, like work towards a strategy or work within the narrative of the game, but even just upkeep work. If you can find a way to reward that, you should. And I feel like maybe this might be a little bit controversial, because, you know, the notion that the Monopoly banker should get a reward. Now, obviously, that would not be fair in the context of the rules of Monopoly.
But an extra $50 every time you pass go for being the baker as your salary?
No. Right. I mean, that wouldn't work within the rules of Monopoly. But I think there are ways to frame games so that the upkeep work can feel fair in the same way that the Ledgerman does it in this game.
Sure, sure.
How about penalties for? Because I can think of a few games that are like, if you lose, you have to be the one to shuffle for the next game, or like clean up, or like silly rules.
Having
like
it
that.
Be the penalty,
yeah,
is additional outside work.
It's sort of taking it on. That's sort of like the other side of the coin, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
But yeah, I think my takeaway is try your best in your game to reward all work, even just monotonous upkeep work.
Yeah. Well, I think my takeaway is along that line, but thinking about, well, one small point on that, like the player in this game is also rewarded for example, with the trivia questions. Like that feels like a player level thing where it's like, oh, I have to look at the board and it just like
be aware of it, especially if you're gonna start calling votes and you're like, okay, I might win this vote, I have to like know what's happening on this board.
It
definitely focuses your attention on the game.
And I think my takeaway though, as a broader one, is I was thinking about how this game is very meta in terms of it's a parody game, and there's other art forms that have been around a lot longer and they have sort of developed more of this like meta level, where music, for example, might be parody or self-referential. Films are like that. You have like films about people making films. things like that. And I don't think there's that many yet in the game world. At least things that get published.
Right.
And not that this got published, but... And I'm sure there's more game experimental games out there that we just haven't seen. But like, I like that idea that the game board game still is kind of young as a art form, and I like the idea of more games that have these like kind of satire
right
angles or like. So yeah, if, listeners, if you think of other ones, let us know in the Discord. That'd be fun to see what else is out there.
Yeah. Now, on the topic of trivia cards, yeah. I think trivia is a pretty interesting mechanic, actually.
At first, I was really worried it was going to be about, you know, popular culture or, like, just general, like, knowledge trivia. I'm like, oh, God, that's terrible. Yeah. But when it was about the game, I'm like, actually, that's really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, okay, well, how many people have gotten a cone? It's like, okay, let me think.
Yeah.
How many cones have been gotten? How many cones have been achieved? Like having
I thought
that
it was maybe going to be trivia about the rules because the rule book is so dense.
And we did have to, like, there's a lot of little referential things that we had to kind of look around and look at things to try mm-hmm. to really grasp what was going on. But honestly, yeah, I agree. The trivia is a really novel concept.
Mm-hmm.
So to clarify, Ananda, did you come up with the trivia questions?
Yes, I had to come up with the trivia questions because there weren't any available.
Yeah.
But they are
game state.
Yeah, they're about the game itself.
Yeah.
The current game stage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So knowledge of the rule book is not especially helpful for them. You have to pay attention to the board.
That's awesome. That's great.
But I think trivia is a really interesting mechanic, and actually I've used trivia myself in my Legend of the Boatman game, and it works really well there because it's a way to hit. In Legend of the Boatman, players don't know all the rules to the game.
Oh.
And trivia is an opportunity to give players hints about the rules, because I can ask a question where they don't know the answer, but because it's multiple choice, they now know some options for what the answer could be.
Mm-hmm.
And that helps them figure things out. So I think trivia works especially well in games that have some sort of mystery going on, because they give you an excuse to create a multiple choice question that will reveal some information.
Meanwhile, throwing out red herrings in that game of like, wait, this is a possibility that...
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think trivia is a pretty cool mechanic in non-trivia games.
Yeah, and in Cones of Dunshire, it's interesting to think about the possibilities of like, ooh, I didn't even think about this angle of the board, like
right.
the one about how many troops are on black spaces.
Right.
It's like, I didn't know that the colors mattered in this game.
Yeah.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I guess the one thing we haven't touched on that much is the whole day-night thing.
Well, we didn't play with it much in the game.
Right, because we only... the cone.
We ascended to the summit once,
and then I think it flipped once.
Yeah,
flipped the cone.
Yeah, we only got the cone of decision at the very end of our play session.
Yeah.
Because until somebody acquires the cone of decision for the first time, nobody is able to cover or uncover the cone in order to change between day and night. But day and night is relevant in the game because some of the cards do have stronger or weaker effects or costs depending on whether it is day or night.
Yeah, all my spirit cards had different costs, which I think you came up with as well, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, it is a mechanic in the game
that
they have different costs at day or night.
The concept is in the game, but you created the different cards
The
different costs, yeah.
but it reminds me a little bit of Oath, actually, funnily enough. Because like the cone of decision is this victory-related thing that a player can control and players struggle over. Similar to like in Oath, there's the darkest secret and the people's favor, which both also give you control over important parts of the game, but are also things that you struggle over as a victory condition.
I like that. And actually, it reminds me of Catan in that longest road, largest army.
Yeah.
Not that you get powers with those, but it's like a title to fight over.
Yeah.
That's
something you're all vying for.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that versus like just oh, I did this achievement and now I have it forever. Oh, right. Well, actually, you might fight over this title.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, just to go into my takeaway before I forget to do it. For me, it's all about the dice, which I know is really funny. But the rolling dice to get figure out how many dice you roll, I thought was just the funniest joke, especially when I watched the show the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I just started laughing. I could not help it. Because obviously, like, in normal design, it's like, no, you would never roll dice to determine how many dice you roll. Because that's just obscene. But honestly, I loved having a variable element for how many dice you would roll. And then your choice of between you will get 5 points, but it'll be allocated specifically towards something. And then a general pool that you can use to enhance those specific things. Like, actually, I really like that system.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't think it should be rolling dice to do it. Because I was thinking even about it while we were talking. Like,
yeah.
Even if you brought it down to D4s, just to kind of even out the distribution over the numbers, like, it still would be too chaotic. Because mm-hmm. someone would get, like, you know, 44, or, you know, 16.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest issue is that low numbers are strictly worse than high numbers.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So having other elements in the game, kind of like the Ledgerman, where, like, you would get dice that you will be, or not dice, but, like, points that you'll be able to use in the future, and then you'll get to choose which dice you roll based on that pool, mm-hmm. and having that be the variable, so, like, your choices then determine how your future
yeah.
resources will turn out. Then still yeah. have that be kind of a variable. I think that'd be really cool.
Yeah, and I really like the dice colors determining how much you can do of an action. And it actually took till now to click that, oh, it's kind of like roll for the galaxy. Roll your dice to have action types assigned.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that one gives you a little more flexibility.
Oh,
but
you're right.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about that.
It's such a fun mechanic. I would love to see more of that in a game.
Yeah, I mean,
it does have a similar thing where you can convert the dice of one color into another. It's just very inefficient.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it's very expensive. But, like, I was able to get myself down to zero RS half of the time, at least. I guess that would be one turn. I feel like for both of my turns, I got down to, like, completely zero, like, trading in things, doing things that I wanted to do. I felt very efficient and felt very satisfying to use up all of the resources that you had.
Yeah. Yeah, rolling dice to determine your points for different actions, it makes you consider strategies you might not otherwise have considered.
Exactly, yeah.
And actually, it'd be interesting, because Roll for the Galaxy happens behind your screen, and then everyone reveals, and it's said.
Right.
But it would, and in this one, you would roll... And you don't know what other people are going to roll, so it doesn't matter.
Right.
But it'd be interesting if you had a game where everyone rolled their dice and you could see everyone's dice. So you knew what actions people were going to do. It's
like, oh, maybe? They've got all military actions, like, this turn.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. But, like, you imagine you have a pool of 5 dice and you see what actions people have available.
Mm-hmm.
And you're doing one action at a time, taking a turn. Like, that could get kind of tense and interesting.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I know Trevor has a few of these left. Is he going to use it for an attack or, yeah.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I think that'd be really neat.
Yeah. Well, I love that we've watched. So there are actually 2 episodes of Parks and Rec that feature Cones of Dunshire. The arc of it is Ben decides, nah, this game is nothing. I'm going to throw it away. But then... several episodes or maybe a season later.
A while later,
Ben is meeting with some people in an office and he's like, wait, what? Where did you get this game? And they have the Cones of Dunshire laid out on the table and they're really into this game. And they're like, oh, wait, you're the architect? and so then... he finds out that someone got a hold of his prototype.
Well, it's his accounting firm. He gave it away to his old accounting firm.
Oh, right. Yeah. So then, yeah, they've been playing, turns out, and they challenge him. He challenges them to. Like,
and the figure that second episode must have expansion content in it.
Yeah,
because
that was the funniest part to me. Because as they're explaining the rules and what's going on, we're like, yeah, nothing it's is
something
common.
About his humble farmer in the cone.
They're just making up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know Where do we go from here, guys? Cone-like games. What's the next cone-like game? Sound off in the comments if you... I can't think of it. We did play... there's the pyramid-shaped games.
Ooh.
Zendo, yep. And...
Homeworld.
Associated. Homeworlds. Yep. Can't think of other cone games, though.
Yeah.
Mm. Cone there's, Imperium.
Yeah. Well, I guess... Wait, what am I saying? I designed a cone game. Thanks to Trevor's Game Jam pieces. Were cones.
Oh, my goodness, you did.
The trees. You the trees. Did. Are, it's all about
the trees.
Oh, my God.
It's all about Charlie, the cones,
you did.
Charlie.
I did. You did. So next episode, we'll be talking about Ringyo coming out by Paperson Games. So yeah,
it's all about the cones.
It's all about the cones.
That is my most complicated game, by the way.
It absolutely is.
Yeah,
I'm super impressed that that's where it went. Like,
yeah,
all because of a samurai game jam at 2DCon one year.
Yeah, yep. And I should have thought to include dice to roll to see how many dice you roll, but
yeah, always
missed opportunity. Maybe in the expansion.
All of my next designs will have you roll dice to figure out how many dice you will roll.
Yes.
Yeah.
Major takeaway.
Oh yeah.
Yep. Well, with that, hope you enjoy your April 1st, and we'll see you next time.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Tabletop Takeaway. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you. So please tell your friends and visit our website at thetabletoptakeaway.com, where you can suggest games and mechanics for us to cover next on the show.